Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to part two of the Special Innovation Project teleconference series. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode, but later today we will conduct a question-and-answer session and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require operator assistance during today's conference, you may press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone to speak with an operator. And as a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. Now, I'd like to introduce your host for today's conference, Christine Stiegel.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the teleconference this afternoon, our Learning in Action Network for our special project. We appreciate you joining us and for part two of the community-based hospital long-term care programs. Again, this presentation today really offers an innovative way to manage the post-acute care needs of medically complex, difficult-to-place patients. And Ron and Shelley this afternoon will be going into a little bit more specifics on how they've set up their complex care program. Those of you who've registered for today's conference call were forwarded via email a copy of the slides that will be referenced during today's presentation, along with the program evaluation form. As a reminder, this conference call session is being taped and will be posted to the events section of the iPro Special Projects webpage on the iPro.org website. I want to apologize to everyone for not getting the first teleconference posted, as we said, but if you check either later today or first thing tomorrow morning, it should be posted along with the presentation slides for the first teleconference. Again, we are very pleased to have Ron Legault and Shelley Letow as our guest speakers today. Ron is the Executive Director of the Hospital Executive Council in Syracuse, New York, which is a collaborative organization for the three acute care hospitals in Syracuse. In this position, he is responsible for projects among the hospitals that focus on improvement of efficiency and outcomes of health care. Shelley Letow is the Assistant Director of the Hospital Executive Council, and in this position, she is responsible for the development of the healthcare data related to all the council's projects. This includes information related to inpatient discharges, length of stays, emergency medical services, and patient outcomes. As mentioned, all the lines are muted, and there will be a question and answer session about halfway into the program and then at the end. So if you have any comments or thoughts or ideas that you want to share at that time, please feel free to write them down, and we'll be getting to them. Ron, as the initial part of his presentation, will be addressing some of the comments that we got and questions related to the part one series on his on the evaluation forms. So at this time, I will transfer the phone call over to Ron.
Okay, great, Chris. Thank you. I appreciate all of you that dialed in today. The way we're going to try to do this is we frankly put out a fair amount of information on the last call. And if you're like us, and you may not be, sometimes the stuff takes a little time to sink in. And you think of great questions, but you don't always think of them on the call. So what we want to do on the first 15, 20 minutes, however long it goes, is talk about some follow-up to issues that came up on the last call that were raised to Chris and elsewhere, and then we'll go ahead with the second part of the presentation. On the last call, we dealt mainly with what I guess I would say is the front end of difficult-to-place complex care. We talked about how discharges to nursing homes and home care, when compared with the severity-adjusted national averages for our population in Syracuse, generate almost all of the excess days. In other words, where our stays are long, it's almost always because people need long-term care, especially nursing homes. And we talked about two programs that were developed by the Syracuse hospitals through the Hospital Executive Council to address that. One is what we call the difficult-to-place program, which is a way of identifying patients who are difficult-to-place. People who down the road will not go into long-term care at the rate approximating the average for the rest of the nation. And we talked about a way that we have of exchanging information in a very simple manner to identify those patients and to track them and to circulate information about them at the patient-specific and at the aggregate level to everybody in the system. And if you check your slides, the third slide is a sample page from one of our weekly summaries of difficult-to-place patients. And we have the names encrypted, and basically it's just a summary list. All the patients at the top, where you see people for whom the discharge disposition is not filled in over on the right, are people that when this list came out was still in the hospital. Down there at the bottom, you see a bunch of names of facilities and dates filled in. Those are the people who since the last list, and these go out weekly, every single Tuesday, from Shelley, these are people who have been placed since that time. So it's a, I don't like buzzwords, but it's a transparent process so that everybody in the system, there's a list like this for each of our three hospitals that goes out, and it goes out on email. I should say, people ask me sometimes, do you guys use a website? With all due respect to those of you out there who have great websites, no. We use email because it puts people in a position of getting the stuff right in their faces. There's no website that they have to access. We put it right out there, so they're going to see it with their emails. And our list goes out every Tuesday on the email, and they can not only see who's the types of patients that are still waiting in the hospitals, but again, down the bottom, they can see who's been placed completely transparent across the system since the last list went out. Then we also have a difficult-to-place summary, and that difficult-to-place summary is a compilation of what has happened during the past month. And you can see down the left side the names of the facility, the long-term care facilities in our system. You can see the names of the hospitals. And under each hospital in total, you can see the number of difficult-to-place patients that were placed, the total new admissions from nursing homes, and the percent of difficult-to-place for each facility coming from each hospital in total. Now, some of the questions that were raised about this concerned, it was a good question about who puts together this material. Well, she's sitting right next to me, and Shelley does this every week. She's responsible for interacting with the hospitals, for getting the lists. No offense, we have great hospitals, but the lists aren't always perfect when they come in. Sometimes you'll get people from a previous list that disappeared. So keeping track of all these people and getting them up to speed is our responsibility. And then the summaries at the end of the month is also Shelley's responsibility. So we have an in-house process here. This is no big deal. I mean, you know, this is all done in Excel. I'm sure you can see it on the screen. And we keep these lists, and we track over time. And the kind of summary that you see here is a monthly summary. We also do it year-to-date. The example that we provided is for all of 2012. We also had a good question about how much does this cost? That was a real good question. No offense, we're not big on cost accounting here in the office. We have a small shop. There are only three total staff in the organization. We had to kind of guesstimate. We guesstimate that for the whole difficult-to-place program, compiling these lists, the subacute program that we also talked about, where we're providing program development funds to nursing homes, tracking those patients, we estimate that over the system on an annual basis, probably somewhere between $45,000 and $50,000. Now, to emphasize, that is shared among our three hospitals because we do it all together. So each one is coming up with about 15 to 16K apiece. And that's for 52 weeks a year. One of the problems you have in a small shop is when people go on vacation, there's not enough bodies to substitute and fill in. But that's a reasonable estimate about what this costs. We also had a question about identifying trends. When these lists go out, Shelley and I are usually looking at each other Tuesday morning to try to identify what happened. And, we have various trends we identify. No offense, our hospitals are in competition. Is that a surprise? Everybody's in competition, and difficult-to-place placements are at a premium. It's easy to get facilities for good reason to take people who are advantageous payers, people who are rehabs. Difficult-to-place patients are not easy to get people to take, and this is, to a certain extent, a brokering process. And so we notice trends in that, and we note them. We had a trend that we noticed the other day from one of our hospitals where it seemed they were getting, a fair number, maybe four or five a week, of difficult-to-place patients going home. Now, it is not unheard of in our world that difficult-to-place patients would go home because some difficult-to-place patients will remain in the hospital for 4 or 5 or 6 weeks, and if they don't get placed, they'll get great long-term care services, but they won't get them in the right place. They'll get them in the hospital, and they will be discharged home. The trend that we noticed was that for one particular hospital, that was happening in most cases, but there were a number of patients that were marked difficult to place going home in less than a week. In our opinion, those people shouldn't have been difficult to place in the first place. Brought it to the hospital's attention. They're going to be following it because, again, the only people we want on this list, to the extent we can do it, are people who are truly difficult to place. I hope that clarifies the questions, some of the questions that came up about the last presentation. I want to answer one other question over a few minutes here, and then we're going to provide kind of an early break. So if you do have any further questions about the last presentation or about what I've just said, just make a note, hang on to it, and we'll be right back. The other question that came up was very different, and it was it was about what else we do as an organization, and frankly, sometimes we get so immersed in long-term care that some people do get the idea that that's all we do, and that just is not the case. And I wanted to provide you just some samples in a quick, broad brush way. Be glad to follow up with a question about what else we do, and I'm just going to go through this quickly. We have an EMS program. We have a single piece of software that connects our three hospitals plus the ambulance dispatchers. And we use it to monitor ambulance utilization and ED visits. And that piece of software, which is it's the Infinity EM system, also tracks ambulance diversion. When one of our hospitals goes on diversion, they log in. When they come off diversion, they log out. And all of our hospitals are interested in their ambulance utilization, their EMS utilization, because they're interested in good patient care and because they're competing. And we do a report. That's the next slide after the EMS slide. We do a report every single business day that identifies the hours in diversion, which are way down. We've had great success reducing diversion and numbers of ambulances and ED visits for every one of the three hospitals for every day. We don't do it on the weekend, but the Monday report includes Saturday and Sunday. And this is a rolling total. It's 7 days at the same time. We do a monthly summary as well. I don't want to dwell on it because we're talking about long-term care, but if somebody's interested in what else we're doing, that's fine. There's also a slide that lists the publications we've done on their EMS program. Just so you have a little background, you want to follow up on these, that's fine. We also have outcomes improvement programs. We have developed two programs, one for complications and one for readmissions, through a partnership with 3M Health Information Systems. And these programs focus on using the potentially preventable complication software and the potentially preventable readmission software to improve outcomes. We've had great success on the complication side, system-wide reducing inpatient complications by about 40% over a four-year period. It's been a battle, but we've had some great progress, and we have some directions also that we're working on down the road. Readmissions has been a tougher struggle. We are making some progress, but it's very slow. Also included a list of a number of publications that we have put out there in referee journals, and the especially the complications, also the readmission program. We also, the third piece, do inpatient data for the four hospitals. We have a statewide database in New York. It's called SPARKS. It's an acronym. It's a nice system. It's run by great people. The problem is it doesn't turn over data until about 6 to 8 months after the conclusion of a given month. We are linked directly with our three hospitals, so we can turn over inpatient data, otherwise known as market share data. We can turn it around as soon as coding is completed for the previous month. We have one of our hospitals, our smallest med-surg population, completes coding on the 12th of each month, the next one on the 20th, last one on the 28th. So by the 30th, we can provide updated data. We don't really have a market program because we're serving all the hospitals and we're not involved in marketing. But those market share data are very popular, and I am making an understatement. Off of those data, we also do, remember I showed you the ambulance report each morning, we do an occupancy report for all of our major services, MedSurg and smaller services. That's the next two pages for each of the hospitals. It's, again, every business day, covering every day with a rolling 7-day total. And if anybody has any questions about that, we're glad to answer it. Also provided a list of publications that have come off of those data. Probably talked a little too much on the front end about this stuff, but I wanted to give you a flavor about what we're doing. And we're going to go back to long-term care in a minute, talk about complex care. But before I do that, I thought it'd be a good idea to provide people with an opportunity to raise and answer any questions. So Daniel and Chris, I turn it back to you, see if there are any questions before we move down the road.
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, if at this time you wish to ask a question, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. If your question is later answered or if you wish to remove yourself from the queue for any reason, you may press the pound key to do so. Once again, to ask a question, please press star then one. At this time, I see no questions in the queue.
Okay, Ron, why don't you continue?
Okay. Okay. Again, you can ask other questions about the initial material if you want to down the road. Just hang on to them for right now. The last piece of this two-part presentation is about what we call in Syracuse complex care. Many of you that are elsewhere in the country may call it long-term acute care. It's known by different names. To us, it's the high end of difficult to place. We have what we call a garden variety difficult to place, which are people that are hard to place, but they don't—they're not hard to place because they have any special service needs, any high-tech needs, any complicated needs. They're just people with multiple chronic diagnoses or payer issues or family issues. They're just hard to place. Increasingly, we have found that as the difficult-to-place population has shrunk, what remains is a core of patients who have complex care needs. I think LTAC is a good name, long-term acute needs, that cannot be served or could not be served elsewhere in this community. And so we did, we needed to get a grip on this population. And, again, if you turn the page after complex care, this is beyond our subacute programs, people who need complicated services. You might call them acute care services, or you might call them long-term care services, but complicated services that get in the way of placement. Now, I provided another list of our subacute programs because I wanted to try, to the extent possible, to draw a line between what we're doing in our subacute programs and what we would call complex care. our subacute programs are about basically single medications or single pieces of equipment like a wound vac or a piece of bariatric lift. Those single pieces of equipment, resources, meds, needs that stand in the way of hospital discharge. The line between that and complex care, and we'll talk about specific services that we would categorize under complex care, is a line between basically straightforward single resource needs and multiple needs. And we needed to characterize these patients across our system in a detailed way. So a few years ago, we did a study on full year data going from May 2009 to April 2010 and characterized these patients. I'm going to show you the results of that study. It took a while for the results to sink in. It took a while for planning to occur. And I think you all probably know how the months can pass. And so we ended up with people several months down the road saying, gee, let's do a follow-up and see if it's the same thing. So we did a follow-up study on a two-month period from December 2011 to 2012. Both of these studies required a lot of work because they started with the administrative data that Shelley and I ran, but they ended up having to really get the detailed information about resources out of the patient records. And it took a long time. We got a small grant from a local foundation, enlisted the services of a number of our nurse care managers, and went right to the records and really had to collect a lot of information. I'll just go into the study right now, and we're going to have another question period at the end, so I won't waste a lot of time hemming and hawing. We can talk about what we found in the study. Just some initial parameters on the populations. If you look at the study populations, these are med-surg patients who remained in the hospitals with stays greater than 25 days. Now, the good news about this population was that we didn't have any of these complex care services in the community. So we were able to do this study totally on hospital data. Of course, the bad news is they all remained in the hospital to stay as a grade of 25 days and soaked up a whole lot of our capacity and our resources. But again, we believe that for a small metropolitan area, 600,000 population, we have a good picture of what complex long-term acute care looks like. And you can see both studies came out with pretty much similar statistics. The discharges were different because one was for 12 months and one was for 2 months. But the mean stays were very similar. The severity-adjusted national averages were similar. This is comparing with what the national average would be, including all those LTAC states out there. And sometimes we wish we were in your category, gang. And looking at the average daily census difference. And for a community with a total acute care census of about 1,400 people, these patients were taking up a lot of beds. The initial study, 78, 90-some-odd in the second study, but these people were taking up a large chunk out of our utilization. So that really justified taking a good look at them and trying to do something about it. As far as study methodology went, the initial thing that we did was we excluded other populations that didn't need complex care services. The big population that we excluded out of those people who stayed 25 days or more were people who needed critical care, because, frankly, we saw no possibility of replicating hospital critical care elsewhere in the community. So I'll show you in a minute, we did exclude critical care. We also excluded patients with issues that were not service issues. We had some few patients that ran into family issues and payer issues, lengthy delays in getting Medicaid. Not a big thing in our system anymore, but it accounted for a few patients, and family issues. What we ended up with was the complex care population. And what our nurses that collected the data and helped us analyze the data did was they helped us identify the drivers, meaning how many services were behind the extended stays. We ran the identification of the drivers through twice. So we had are the nurses we worked with at each of the three hospitals do an initial identification of the drivers and then go back and look at the drivers again. We wanted an assurance that if we were going to do programming for this population, we were going to reach the right conclusions. We didn't want to reach one set of conclusions in one pass and another set in another pass. And the nurses did a great job. They spent a lot of time on this. And they basically verified that the two studies, the two passes, were talking about the same thing. And within each pass, it was a consistent look. And then we got to service utilization. I can come back over any of this, but as far as the exclusions go, you can see on the next page for each of the two studies how many patients we excluded and how many excess days we excluded. This is a fair number of excess days, but not by any means a majority. But again, this was because in this area, it may be different if you're in a large city, but in this area there is no possibility of replicating hospital intensive care services out in the community. There are a lot of things we can replicate, but not hospital critical care services. So these patients were excluded from the study, and you can see that it was about the same number of excess days per patient for the two samples. For the people that were left, we divided them into single service drivers, double service drivers, and multiple service drivers. And this is very important because unlike the subacute patients, these were people that had complicated needs, hence the term complex care or long-term acute care. And we found that a number of these patients did have single service needs. It basically boiled down to one thing. Examples, multiple intravenous therapy, extensive wound care, total parenteral nutrition, chemotherapy. Then we found that there were a number of patients that used more than one of these services. It was a complex care situation, but it just wasn't specific to one service. It was multiple services. There was double services. And then we found some that were multiple services that basically amounted to subacute long-term care out there in the community, 3 and 4 and 5 of these services. And the number of excess days per patient increased slightly from singles to doubles to multiples, but basically we found that these patients, on average, were staying about 4 weeks to a month too long in our hospitals. And once we got done with the low-hanging fruit, and we're not done with garden variety difficult to place, but we've addressed most of it. This is the population, that is our homework assignment in our hospitals that accounts for most of our excess days that remain. So this is just a look at the original study, and then the next page is a look at how those patients played out among our hospitals. The biggest single population was our university hospital. They are the tertiary center for our community and for the region. They have the highest clinical intensity in our system. Second largest was St. Joseph's Hospital Health Center. University and St. Joseph's really account for each about 40% of our med-surg patients, medical surgical patients in the community. St. Joseph's has a surgery program that's slightly bigger than universities, has the largest number of discharges long-term care. So it was no surprise that those two hospitals came out with the biggest number of complex care patients. Across Hospital, as our third hospital, came out with a substantially lower number. Krauss also has a decent-sized med-surg program, but it's not on a par with the others. Krauss does have outside medicine and surgery, the regional neonatal center, the regional high-risk obstetric center, a large substance abuse treatment program. And so, again, when we looked at complex care, the Krauss numbers ended up lower because complex care was about medicine and surgery, and a lot of their population fell outside medicine surgery. Kraus is about evenly divided census-wise between med-surg and those other services. So this is the way the drivers fell among the hospitals. So not surprisingly, the biggest incentive was on the backs of a university in St. Joseph's to try to get the ball rolling. Now, the next slide just looks at the follow-up study, and you could flip back two pages if you want and compare the excess days per patient in the original study with the number of excess days per patient in the follow-up study. The multiple went up quite a bit in the follow-up study, but the single and the double service drivers were almost the same. It was about 4 weeks. And you can see the total patients, the excess days. Again, the total patients is down because it was 2 months, and the original study was 12 months. But that's what we're looking at. Now, again, if you wanted just a snapshot of, and some of you that like to, when you're reading mystery novels, like to get to the end first and see how it came out, may have already gotten to these two next pages. The way the story ended, as far as analysis, was multiple IVs were, by and large, our biggest service need. In the subacute programs, we provided some program development resources for single IVs. And, you know, I mean, classic single IV, vancomycin, generic vancomycin, one drug. And, you know, I'm sure you know, in a nursing home, which only has one or two RNs in-house at one time, that kind of drug only requires about one flush every 24 hours, and you can do it with the existing staff with a little bit of incentive as far as resources for the drug. You jump to multiple IVs, you got a different situation. You're not only talking about higher drug costs, at least in New York State, at least in Syracuse, you're talking about additional staff needs too, because the RN staff just are not available to provide multiple drugs because there aren't that many of them in the house. So multiple IVs is a big one, and it jumped off the table in both studies. If you flip over to the second study, you see it's right at the top of the list. This was our biggest service need, and frankly, it was a godsend to us, we think, because this is something that we can do. I mean, this is something that does not require reinventing healthcare. Multiple IVs are done in hospitals all the time, and it was a resource issue, and so the fact that this generated a large number of excess days was a good sign. Wound care was another big one, and again, this was a labor issue. In our hospitals, the kind of post-surgery wound care that we do, you know, it takes a lot of staff time. And nursing homes, at least in this community, typically do not have the kind of expert staff to provide a lot of this care. And so it didn't surprise us a lot that wound care was there. Now, it was interesting that wound care, that the multiple IVs, most of the multiple IV patients were single-service drivers. This was basically the complex care need. In the wound care, it was a cross, in most cases, between the wound care and another service. Frequently, multiple IVs. We ran into a whole lot of people with multiple IVs, needed multiple IVs and wound care simultaneously. And that showed up in both studies, too. Mental health was another issue, a completely different issue. And I'm sure you folks know that dealing with mental health issues can require a lot of staff in nursing homes. And in our nursing homes, dealing with mental health patients sometimes takes a lot of staff that nursing homes just don't have if they're going to take care of the rest of their patients. And so this was a situation where we didn't identify too many patients with mental health needs, but we didn't put it on this table, but on a patient-specific basis, on an average basis, the mental health patients probably took up the most average number of excess days per patient. Again, there weren't many of them, but dementia patients, psychosis patients, a few alcohol and substance abuse patients, taking a whole lot of resources. Nutrition also, this is about TPN, and this is a real challenge. You know, TPN is a real challenge in the hospital or a nursing home. It was not a large number of patients, but it stuck out for a fair number of excess days in both studies, and this was a challenge as well. That's basically what the study said. And if you keep your eyes on the numbers of drivers and on the types of services, you can. And if you want to flip back to that list of subacute patient programs, you can see that there's just a very different ball game going on here. In the first part of our efforts, for a large part of our difficult place population, the subacute programs will do it. Or just simply brokering patients, you know, garden variety, difficult to place, will do it. The complex care study was a different ballgame. The multiple IVs, the wound care, the mental health, nutrition, other things like chemotherapy, whole different level of resources, whole different level of expenses. So this was a real challenge. This was basically the system throwing down the gauntlet to the hospital saying, how are we going to do this? And we still don't have that question completely answered. The hospitals have kind of are going at this issue in slightly different ways. One of our hospitals, St. Joseph's, has chosen to develop a complex care program with one of our nursing facilities, with Loretto, which is our biggest skilled nursing facility, and that program took a while to get off the ground, started last March, but in progress about a year. It has slowly grown. And again, the learning curve has been tough here because it's a new ball game for our nursing homes. There's also a language barrier here, too. Obviously, 4 weeks of excess days in an acute hospital can give hospital people a good deal of gastric distress. It's a very long stay. 4 weeks of days in a nursing home is no big deal. I mean, most patients don't stay that long. So there's been a language barrier. There's been a culture barrier. But if you look at the last slide, slow uptake in the average daily census, probably eventually going to get to around 20 for St. Joseph's, to address this population, but they've done it as one hospital with an established relationship with one nursing home, taking their difficult-to-place and their subacute programs and moving them up a notch to look at complex care. Our two other hospitals, at St. Joseph's it's a work in progress. At the other two, it's very much a work in progress. At University, we've had some bumps along the way getting the right partner as far as nursing homes go. We think we have the right partner. It's probably going to be St. Camillus. And we're going to, as opposed to just one hospital working directly with one nursing home, probably going to end up with a program that goes back through the Hospital Executive Council for the resources and works this as a, in effect, another subacute program, but at a very different level. I mean, taking another subacute program for multiple IVs or for wound care with a different level of resource and a different level of programming. Krause doesn't really have the variety of service needs or the intensity of service needs that the other hospitals have. And so that's something that also was not on the front burner but has begun to move to the surface. And frankly, the HEC, the Hospital Executive Council, working with Krause, like working with the university, probably going to address this as complex care, as another kind of level, in effect, another subacute program. So this kind of thing, we think from the St. Joseph's experience that this will work. Frankly, the St. Joseph's folks at Loretto have taken about a year to get this on stride. It was a lot longer than I thought it would take, but it's a good program, and the other folks have some good experience on their own floors. I think that moving this up the line at the other two hospitals take a lot less time, and we'll go from there. That's where we are, and there's a lot more thought process behind all this. Rather than just have me dribble on, I thought it would be best to pretty much wrap it up here and ask those of you that are out there if you have questions, and go from there. And by questions, I guess I'd suggest a couple things. If you have questions now, I'll answer them now to the extent we can. If you think of questions, as I am prone to do after the meeting, you feel free to call Chris and review them with her. If there are enough people that want to, I have no trouble coming back for another half hour or something, just to bang around some questions in some number of days or weeks or whatever. We can do that. If you want to get into the kind of thing that we've done in great detail and want to have a focused discussion with Shelley and I, we're up for that too. We can certainly do that if you want to schedule it. So let's provide a brief opportunity now for 10 minutes or so or whatever people want to spend on what they're seeing now. And again, if you want more, get a hold of Chris. You can get a hold of us, and we can go from there. Fair enough. Daniel, Chris?
Daniel, would you like to let people know how they can ask a question, please?
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star, then one on your touchtone telephone.
Ron, while we're getting some questions queuing up, I was wondering if you could, you know, since St. Joseph's and Loretto have the longest kind of partnering program going with the complex care implementation, could you elaborate a little bit about the shared services? Maybe not the financial piece, because I would guess that they might be doing some financial sharing or cost sharing. Is there other types of supports that St. Joseph's have provided to Loretto, maybe staff or something like that?
Yeah, I guess what I'd say is if you folks want to go back to the fourth slide in the presentation, which is January-December 2012, okay. Difficult-to-place patients, and you look at the Loretto line, you see that Loretto took a total of 259 difficult-to-place patients last year, 178 of them from St. Joseph's. Got it?
Yeah.
So Loretto is our biggest difficult-to-place admitter. I'm going to answer your question in pieces, Chris. Loretto is our biggest difficult-to-place admitter. So they have experience with these tougher patients, okay? And it's not so much of a leap as it is a step for them to get from difficult-to-place to complex care. Number two, they have an established relationship with St. Joseph's. Most of their difficult-to-place patients came from St. Joseph's, 178 out of 259. So these people, these two facilities actually have a program that they call CareLink. And CareLink is a program by which the Loretto admissions folks and the nursing folks and the St. Joseph's care management folks meet every Wednesday noon, every Wednesday at 1 o'clock, I'm sorry. And they go over prospective patients, and they go over what it will take to take care of those patients and to expedite the transition. And so they've got a long history of their nursing folks meeting and identifying resources necessary to make that transition. And again, not everybody has that kind of a direct relationship, but it didn't surprise anybody here once the study were finished that St. Joseph's and Loretto would be the first ones to implement a program because they've got the relationships there. They've got the patient base moving anyway, and as opposed to starting from square one, you know, they're out starting from square 10 or two. So as far as, you know, sharing staff, sharing information before you share staff, making sure that the education is there. I mean, again, Chris, when we started the first of our subacute programs, which is the IV program, back in 2003, if you check the slide, each of our hospitals agreed to support the program by providing education to the staffs, the nursing staffs in the nursing homes, and by being available for a consultation. All the subacute programs have that kind of education and consultation lying under them. Going to complex care really required just jacking that up to another level. More education, more resources, more consultation. And so I think it was just an extension of a continuum. I mean, I don't want to imply it was easy, but it's the kind of thing where, you know, what is good care about? It's about more education. It's about more resources. It's about practice. And that's how these facilities, I think, are making it work. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It, you know, the building of trust and relationships are key.
Yes.
So if a hospital was thinking about doing this, they might first in-house look at the skilled nursing facilities that they currently have higher patient referrals.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I had a discussion.
Facilities, so.
Yeah, I had a discussion one day. I don't mean to be pejorative, but we're, you know, we were talking about another program we were looking at, and people were saying, well, what do I need to get this program? How much money do I need? How much of this do I need? And we came back and said, well, the first thing you need is a partner.
Right.
It doesn't matter about your resources or your money or your staff. You need the right partner. And you need a partner that is favorably disposed toward doing this. And it's interesting because the University Hospital partner is going to be St. Camillus. And Loretto has a long history of chronic care in this community. St. Camillus has a long history of acute rehab care, long-term rehab care. And so they're changing gears in some ways. But they're changing gears because they're looking down the road and seeing that, I think as all of us know, a lot of these ortho rehab patients are going directly home now that didn't go home in the past. And they're looking toward changing gears and looking at what, you know, the next wave will be in long-term care. And they've reached the conclusion this is going to be part of it, and they want to be in on the ground floor. And I think that's a great conclusion. And they've always been a great facility, and I think they will make the transition just fine.
So it's really the comfortableness of them taking a risk and having the hospital as a partner, so they're both really kind of sharing in that risk-taking. So.
Yeah, and your comfort level. I mean, at the rehab level, our university hospital physical medicine rehab program, our acute rehab program, has always had a direct relationship with St. Camillus. So we're talking about broadening that relationship to complex care and making that one go. And we will make it go. And Kraus, another facility, James Square, which is one of our largest facilities, will probably be the partner for them. And that's a relationship that's evolving too. But again, I think in order not to waste time, I think the partner is key to get the right partner. And again, if you're in a bigger community, you've got more options as far as partners. We only have 12 nursing homes, so we don't have endless possibilities. But you got to get the right partner.
Yeah, I think it's also interesting to note that each hospital individually is creating their own program. That it's, although the collaboration between the Hospital Executive Council has bridged those gaps, the hospitals themselves have had to kind of go out of the norm, maybe, and develop those programs individually.
Yeah, that is interesting because we had a discussion, it was only a couple of weeks ago, where one of the hospitals said, well, why don't we, as an alternative, why don't we have a number of nursing homes each take one complex care program. Like we'll do all the multiple IVs in one place. We'll do all the wound cares in another place. We'll do all the TPNs in another place. And the conclusion in this community, which could be different, you know, out there, was that it's if we do that, then the partnership will be diffuse. I mean, there's a lot of good logic behind doing that. That way you've got all of this in one in nursing home A and all of that in nursing home B and whatever. But they reached the conclusion that having the trust and the partnership in the facility, although it would be doing different services, would be better than interacting at that level with four or five different nursing homes for four or five different complex care services. And again, that doesn't have to be everybody's conclusion, but that was the conclusion here.
Yeah.
I think another thing is, frankly, you know, I think it doesn't take a great deal of imagination or a CFO to reach the conclusion that in the when you go from subacute care to complex care, the resource needs at the long-term care level go up. They go up a lot.
Yeah.
And addressing those resource needs through any number of creative mechanisms, we're all very creative at this, is easier done in a direct relationship or, you know, through the HEC in this case, but with a smaller number of facilities rather than a larger number of facilities. And I agree with that, too. I mean, you know.
Thank you, Ron. Daniel, are there any questions?
At this time, we have a question from the line of Sue Dunga from Living Resources.
Hi, Sue.
Hi. Just a quick question, and it may have been discussed before I tapped in. I'm just wondering, for each of the individuals that were classified as difficult to serve, what was their setting in the community prior to that hospitalization? And also, I'm wondering if the hospital systems have their own home care agencies, or why home care was ruled out for each, you know, for the individuals. I'm not sure with the classifications of infusion, wound care, neurology, and nutrition, if those are care provides. So I guess I just would like to learn a little bit more. Maybe we need to do things differently.
No, I think it's a great question, Chris. Let me, try to answer the first question before the second question before the first, the home care question. Our distribution of those difficult to place lists go to every nursing home and every home health agency in the region.
Okay.
Okay. So everybody gets them, and our preferred disposition is home, because obviously we have. I'm going to scare home care people when I say this, but we have theoretically endless capacity at home, or at least a lot more capacity at home than we have in a fixed nursing home system.
Mm-hmm.
The problem we have at home, obviously, is, I mean, you know, one reason there are nursing homes, and you're talking, you're hearing a hospital person say this, and you all may gasp, but is save resources. You know, you're putting, for a discrete population, you're putting all the therapies in one place, and the nutrition, and all of this in one place on a series of floors in a number of beds, whereas in a home care situation, these patients are very dispersed, and you have all kinds of issues in getting care to them and that kind of thing. But home care is our preferred disposition. GOSIS has its own home care agency, started it in the late 1980s. We are almost at the point now where the other two hospitals have preferred provider agreements with the other major home care provider, which is our Visiting Nurse Association. And that has evolved over time. St. Joseph's was the preferred provider for one of the other hospitals for a time. It's pretty much evolved to the point now where the university and Krauss are going to be using the VNA. No offense, if we can get somebody to home care, rather than, in many cases, for difficult to place, waiting a few extra days to get to a nursing home, we send them to home care. I mean, God love it. And then the other thing that happens from time to time in our community is that we do have difficult to place patients who wait for an extended period of time, can't get a nursing home placement on a timely basis, get what would have been the services that they need to a certain extent in the hospital until their condition improves to where they can go to home care. So they weren't home care candidates in the first place, but they end up going to home care because it was not possible to get the nursing home services on a timely basis. So whether it's on the front end or sort of on the back end, yes, we do a lot of home care. The difficult place list goes to all the home care people. Most of the difficult to place patients' home care is not the first choice, because we assume that what would have been the population that would go to home care has already been discharged without the need for it to go to the difficult-to-place list, because home care is picking up things on the front end, because our first choice is sending the patient home, whether it's self-care or home care. Beyond that, so a little more on your first question, the non-home care question.
Mm-hmm.
Could you come back to me a little bit more on that?
Sure. I had asked where the patients came from that were difficult to serve. Were they all in the community? Were they coming to you from a nursing home previously? Were they in a long-term home health care program? Were they homeless?
Yeah, okay.
I'm just kind of curious, you know, what they looked like before.
Most of them are from home in the community without services, what we would call self-care. Most of them, I'd say a slight majority, I don't have those numbers in front of me. I will, I'll make a deal with you. I'll get those numbers to Chris, and she can get them to you. I'll get you a breakdown. But most of them, this is their first major encounter with the system that is, and most of them, approximately 90% are adult medicine patients. The difference between adult medicine and adult surgery is crucial, because our adult surgery, you know, most of our adult surgery, I'm sure most of yours, is planned. It's scheduled. I don't like the word elective, but that's what it is. And those patients don't become difficult to place. On the other hand, the adult medicine population is something that occurs that's generally not foreseen. And these people end up in our emergency departments. They are the ones that are most difficult to place, rather than the surgery patients. The family's in a crisis, an unforeseen crisis. It's face-to-face with a long-term care system that in a lot of cases it doesn't know. Ergo, care management enters in, helps, and expedites the placement. But I don't know if this is true of all other hospitals, but I can extend this from difficult to place to complex care to something I alluded to back there, the readmissions, the complications. Nine times out of ten, 90% of these patients are adult medicine patients. And that's what makes it tough, because it's unforeseen care needs. Adult medicine usually means, in this system, multiple chronic diagnoses. It's not just one thing. I don't mean to digress, but, you know, there's a lot been written lately about readmissions, and I mean, heart failure is always near the top. We just did a little study. I can also get Chris a copy of this. For our heart failure patients, and heart failure is always cited as the biggest cause of readmissions, only about half of our heart failure patients come back as heart failure. And most of them that don't come back as heart failure come back outside cardiology. They're adult medicine patients. They have multiple chronic medicine diagnoses. And those are the same people that are difficult to place, and those are the same people that account for most of the complex care. I know I've been running around here, Sue, but I hope that answers at least part of your question, and I'll get some of that material to Chris for you.
Okay. No, thank you very much. That was helpful in your presentation also. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions, Daniel?
At this time, I see no further questions in the queue.
Okay, very good. Chris?
Well, thank you. I want to thank Ron and Shelley for coming today and speaking. I think that, Ron, you shared a lot of information, very valuable. I think I certainly was very interested in what you presented. I want to remind people, please fill out your evaluations and any comments. We really look for them for event planning as we move forward within this project. And I want to thank you for participating in this afternoon's teleconference. Have a nice afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attendance in today's conference. This does conclude today's program, and you may now disconnect. Have a nice day.